Hello and welcome to this special episode of Daughters of Narcissistic Mothers podcast. Today we have a special guest, Janique Baker. She's a one-on-one soul-led intuitive life coach, energy healer, and meditation facilitator who helps people embrace the paradox of their existence, stop gaslighting themselves, and move through life transition with self-trust and conviction. So welcome, welcome, Janique. I'm so happy to have you here.
And I'm so happy to be here. And I'm so happy that I found you. And I'm so happy for your content and immense gratitude for all the work that you do. I am so appreciative.
Thank you so much. And likewise, so we connected just, it was about a week ago over some content. You reached out asking questions and I was intrigued because, like the way you shared, the way you asked was like, there's more to this woman. And so I went check you out on Instagram and I discovered a beautiful, beautiful content that you share and that you also do this work helping people, which I know if you're a listener, you know, I don't actually typically have a lot of guests on this podcast. I work with, it's like heart connection. If someone just intrigues me and I'm like, yeah, we can work, we can do something together, I do invite them on. Otherwise, no. So I was really like, yeah, this can definitely work. And we're going to make a beautiful conversation happen. So here we are.
What an honor.
So, Janique, if you would like to start by, I don't know, sharing a little bit of your story. I've read a little bit about your story, how you came to do this work. And it's pretty, pretty awesome to actually hear what you've been through and the different transitions. So if you want to share about that, that'd be great.
Yeah, absolutely. So my life, like the first formative years and then early 20s and kind of the first, I would say, quarter of my year, I was just kind of on what I call the path, the prescribed traditional path of you do this and then you go to school and then you get an education, you get a good job, you get married, you buy a house. And I was just kind of following, I call it the script. And the script got me the things that I was supposed to have right at the checkpoints. I was supposed to have it. And every time I hit a checkpoint, there was just a little bit of a void and emptiness, something that just was unfulfilled. And I just kept thinking, okay, well, maybe when I hit the next checkpoint, that spot will fill up. And it just kept going. And it was like I could see, okay, everything's fine. And life has given me everything that I'm supposed to have by now, but it just something doesn't feel right. And then the reason why I talk about this embracing the paradox piece is because I started to explore parts of myself at a certain point in my life when I started on my personal healing journey. But I would say to myself, like I started having this like immense desire to travel. And I'd always been a world traveler, but I wanted to go travel by myself. But at the time I was married. And I said to myself, well, you can't be a good wife, but also be this free spirited person going to travel. Like you have to be one or the other. And then I would be like, okay, I had this job, you know, and I finally signed the salary at the job. And then I was like, okay, you have to be responsible. And if you want to, my goal was to start a family at the time, or so I thought, if you want to have a family, you have to have structure, you have to have stability, you have to have roots. And then I thought, but there's this part of me that wants something else. And everything always felt like a contradiction. Like, it's like, you can't have both. You have to pick. And then I would just witness all the ways I was gaslighting myself and hearing like all this, like intuitive, what I now understand is just like intuitive wisdom coming through me. But just all the voices of everything that I learned growing up or what I was taught or the script that I was given to me, especially as a woman, especially as a woman in the cultures that so I grew up in predominantly in actually South Asian culture. So I'm half Jamaican, half Black, and half Sri Lankan Tamil, South Asian. But I grew up with my mom and my grandparents in a very culturally South Asian upbringing. And so there was a very strong script for the archetypal feminine role of the expectation to get married, have a kid, and that's when you're fulfilled and you've done your duties, and that's when you've completed your job in society as a woman. So I just, yeah, it just started everything that was put on me just felt like, okay, let me use everything that, I was taught and gaslight me out of all my intuitive wisdom and tell myself that you can't have both. And then finally I started asking myself, like, what if I can? Like, what if I'm allowed to have it all? And then I just started making big changes. I ended up leaving my marriage. I ended up quitting my job. And I went on to find jobs that allowed me to travel and work. I went on to have partnership that allowed me to travel on my own and still be in partnership. And I explored polyamory and openness, and I found all these different structures of existing that I was like, oh, maybe there's a way, and not that I'm saying that everyone's life transition happens in this way, but what I found was after supporting myself through these own life transitions, just being able to support other people through, sorry, my cat is meowing.
That's okay. Cats are welcome.
Being able to support people through their own life transitions, I found that in everyone, there exist these paradoxes. And just there's so many ways in which we gaslight ourselves based on whatever programming we've had, and just being able to help people expand their view on what is possible. I have you ever heard of that show Love It or List It, when they do these like they go into people's homes and then they do renovations. The people want to sell, and they the
Oh, okay,
show is like, okay, either we're gonna renovate this home and you're gonna love it, or by the end, you're going to list it and we're going to get you a really good price. I always say, like, I'm going to help you either love it or leave it, whatever it is in your life. Like, let me help you. Like, I never think just because somebody is in this transitional period and thinks, oh, maybe this relationship isn't for me. Maybe this, I find that if you stay and you embrace your true self, your authenticity, you might not need to run away. Sometimes that response is just because of the turmoil of not accepting yourself and gaslighting yourself. And just to bring it back to the work you do, even understanding half of where my inner gaslighting voice came from has been from having a narcissistic mother and having just, toxic parenting, immature parenting, and just also just like the cultural foundation in which the parenting came through for me really set the tone for all the work that I had to overcome to get to where I am today.
Oh, you touched on so many points, and what a journey. What a journey. I resonate with a lot because people that have listened to the podcast, I do share a little bit. I did have a lot of transitions in my life, a lot of expectations, and we tend to fall into this like box that is like the prescribed box that our family has decided that that's the one. And then on top of that, of course, there's the cultural box and the society that we grow up in. That's another box. And it's like all these boxes that we're putting ourselves in. And we were talking properly yesterday in the women's circle, actually, about loyalty to our pretend identity. So like this identity that we form because of all these boxes, and we end up wanting to be loyal to that. Like even subconsciously, in some ways, we end up being loyal and creating a life that then doesn't belong to us in that way.
I resonate. I love that language for it. It really resonates with me as well. Just having this loyalty and a lot of my understanding of this duality and this paradox came from growing up actually being mixed race, because I always felt like I didn't know how to be both. Like, I had to choose, like, when I was with one half of my family, I could be this culture. And when I was with the other family, I would be this culture. And they always felt like very, a lot of the, I guess, traditions or just the way people are in my two cultures, Jamaican and Sri Lankan, are very opposing. So it always felt impossible, but I literally am both. So there's no way to tell me that I don't belong in both boxes. But it took me a very long time to understand and figure out how to exist in both boxes at the same time, because it always just felt like I was having to go out of one to go into that next one and go back and forth, and that's exhausting when your literal identity actually exists within both.
Because every time you're one way, you're using a lot of energy to deny the other part that
Yes.
is you. I can resonate. I know it's not the same thing as, because I am fully Italian, 100%, but my parents divorced when I was one, so I had two poles, and I always had to be. They were very different. Like my father's family and my mother's family would be very, very different in their approach, and both tendentially narcissistic. So they both wanted their own approach to be the one. So, like when I
Yeah.
was with one person, I had to be one way. And when I was with the other parent and the other family, I had to be a different way. And you do use a lot of energy to deny the parts that you're trying to hide when you're in one's space, and also to put out the ones that you assume or you've learned that are acceptable within that container.
It's exhausting. It's exhausting. It's draining. It's exhausting. And you're never in fully complete acceptance of yourself. It's like it's almost like you can't fully be authentic until you learn how to embrace both. But that's a whole journey on its own, because how do you embrace both, especially at such a young age when you're fighting between authenticity and attachment, and you want so badly just to be taken care of and loved. And so you sacrifice so much authenticity so early in life, especially when you're existing within two boxes, just because you need the attachment. You need, or we need attachment as children. We need to be taken care of and we need to be loved. That's what we want more than anything. So I can just go back and see all the sacrifice I made of my authenticity early on, and then it takes like a whole. It's like you spend the rest of your life deciphering. Okay, was that one, was I supposed to do that one? Okay, no, that one didn't work. Let me take that piece back.
Absolutely. And there's, I can hear it in your voice, and I get actually that it feels like you're there, with that, the softness and forgiveness of that aspect that actually has to put attachment before authenticity when we're children.
Yes.
Because we need to, like, we don't have a choice. That's the survival, that's the part that we have to prioritize. But now when we're like, okay, now we start actually having a choice, and that's when this work becomes really interesting, because now you have a choice to actually, okay, I don't need my parents to survive anymore. I don't need all this attachment to survive anymore, and now I can choose and I can start exploring myself.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, even coming on this, episode with you, I had to sit there and think about the conflict between authenticity and attachment, because everything in my authentic self said, this is what you're supposed to do. Go on this podcast, do this episode, speak your truth, tell your story, and do it without a filter. And then the other part of me said, but what is your mom going to say? What if she finds out? Did it, What happens to that attachment? What happens to that relationship? What happens to that bond, And both of those opposing sides of me were screaming at each other. And I made the choice. I said, no, my authenticity matters more right now.
Yes, absolutely. I remember the absolute conflict when I started the podcast. The podcast is about a year. It's a year and 3 months old at this point, but it took me about 6 months before then, when I decided to call it Daughters of Narcissistic Mothers, to go, oh, what's my mother gonna say? And I am no contact. So, like, the listeners know that I have been no contact for 3 years now, actually in October. So, and I haven't seen my mother for 4 years, but still I am in contact with the rest of the family. I know they do talk about what I do, so she definitely knows
Yeah.
what's going on and what's happening. And so there's always that choice. We were talking recently about within the with like with a client or something about the price. There is a price to pay to not be yourself, and then there's a price to pay to actually be yourself. And it's like, which one? It's which one do you want to choose? Which one do you want to be?
Yeah. And like we said earlier, I think at a younger age, one serves you, and then and I mean continuously throughout our life, I think there's always different points where one might win over the other. I think sometimes we do have little moments where we choose attachment just for safety reasons, or we choose to maybe hide ourselves just to stay safe. But then half the time it's an illusion of safety that we've created in our mind. So really kind of, I mean, a lot of what I do with my clients is how to resource safety from within and actually show yourself that you can be safe and find that feeling of safety within and teaching people how to resource safety within their own body so that they're not making choices out of this false perception of unsafety or fear or risk. Because I think our minds are so incredibly powerful, and the story, even the story for me today coming on here, the story of how unsafe it would be to tell stories about my mother, it screamed at me. And then my body responded, and it felt very real. The threat felt really real. So in order to even come on this podcast, I had to resource safety within myself. I had to, calm my nervous system. I had to do work in my body. I actually sat at my altar and I prayed before coming on here, just, and I put on my protective stones, my crystals, anything that was protection. I was like, in order to do this, I need to feel safe. I want to feel protected, because I'm making a choice that all the years of wiring is telling me is unsafe. But I know now that I can resource safety. I can take care of myself no matter what. Not that the fear is made up. The things that I believe could happen as a result, if my mom hears this episode of this podcast, are very real. Those threats, it's not like I've completely made up the danger, but I'm an adult who can handle that threat. As a child, the threat of a narcissistic mother in her full rage can be very scary and actually very much might affect you in a way where you need to prioritize your safety. But right now, I know, hey, if I sit there and I sit with myself and I say, am I actually unsafe? No, I'm absolutely not. I'm absolutely not. But my body is registering that I am. So what can I do to make myself feel safe right now?
Yes, the inner safety, that is so key and it's so important. And it is a training, like it's literally a retraining of the entire system, the entire nervous system. Doesn't happen overnight. We do, you have to be consistent and you practice and you implemented all the different things that you know. And also I love that you share that actually still today, even coming onto this podcast, that gets triggered. Because I do get clients that ask me, oh, is this ever gonna end? Is there a point where I won't need to do these things? And I'm like, for me, it's a lifelong journey. Once you have those tools, you're probably gonna use them all the time. It's like a lifestyle, and it doesn't mean failing if things get triggered, but you then sit down and do whatever you know that works.
Exactly. And to me, I always see the sign of it working is that you don't go into lengthy cycles and lengthy periods of dysregulation from it. So it's like just as quickly as the threat came in, and the feeling of unsafety, how quickly I was able to take myself out of that was very quick because I've practiced my tools, in depth. The practices, the tools, everything that I have learned, and I practice on a regular basis have become so effective that I don't have to spend a week dysregulated, a month ex but you know what? I say all of that, and I will tell you, I went home in September, and by far it was the I have lived part of my healing journey with my relationship with my mother and my family was moving across the country. So I was born and raised in Toronto and I moved to Vancouver. At the time, did I have it in my conscious mind that I was moving away from them? I didn't, but the more I did work on myself, I realized like somewhere in my subconscious, I was like, you need to go far. Like the only way you heal is like literally, like you have to be unreachable unless you're getting on a plane. Like you need to get away. So I go home though at least once a year, I'd say once a year, if not twice, and I go for lengthy periods of time. So this last trip I was home for almost 3 weeks. And I did go through a period where I had boundaries where I didn't stay at home, but I've recently started staying at home again, because so I grew up with my mom and my grandparents, and my grandfather is now 95, and my mom is his primary caregiver. So the stuff with my mom has gotten really complicated because now in when I'm going to help her help him. It's because of my relationship with him, but she's part of this dynamic. So now this triangle happening where it's like there's involved I'm in this new phase of involvement with my family, with my mother, with my grandfather, where the boundaries that I used to use don't work the same way because of the goals that I'm trying to achieve when I go there. The goals are to support him, support his care. So I'm more physically present. But let me tell you, this last trip, I spent most of my days doing my tools. It took me hours a day to feel regulated. And then when I came back home from that trip, I think it took me a month. Like it was like a month of nervous system disruption, a month of it rocked. I say it kicked my ass. It fully kicked my ass this last trip home, more than any other one has ever.
I so hear you on that, and thank you so much for sharing that. 'Cause yeah, it still does. I know you shared it on. I was going through your post on Instagram and catching up with your content, and you had one where you were saying, if you want proof that you've healed, spend a week with your family. And I remember hearing that, like that was years and years ago. I was at a Buddhist retreat, and the master said something like that, like the kitchen sink, go back home and see how you're getting on when you're at home. That's the thing, it's not when you're on your meditation cushion. And that's where we implement all the things. There's no more challenging a place as your home, your origin home, your family of origin, because that's where all the roles, the patterns, the stuff, like everything gets triggered. So it's absolutely amazing that you actually got to implement all your tools, and that you got actually to manage to navigate it in a way.
Yeah, and it's interesting because even though I part of me could look back and say like could we have held myself better through it? Do I reflect back and think I showed up in with my best self in all the situations back home? Absolutely not. There's a few situations where I met my mom with the same intensity that she met me. But then actually like reflecting on it, one thing that came out this last trip home, and I don't know if you've ever worked with this or talked about this, was anger. And I realized like I realized this last trip that I've never really connected to my anger. And that's because my mom is a very explosively angry person. Very explosive. Screams, swears, slams cupboards, smashes plates, like very like if she's in a mood where she's angry, there can be nobody around her and she will spend an hour talking out loud, cursing, yelling, walking around the house, doing things, slamming things, like very, very, very explosive. So I just think for my whole life, I learned that's scary. That's what anger is. That doesn't seem right or healthy. And so anger must be unhealthy. Like, and then I have never really thought of myself as an angry person, or that I've ever really, I don't think I've ever allowed myself to get in touch with my anger until this last trip, because my mom was in such an erratic, dysregulated state for such a lengthy period of time that was expressing as anger. And then she started to direct some of the anger at me, which all of a sudden one day I just snapped. I snapped and I got in. I couldn't even, I almost like, it was almost like my consciousness was observing my behavior, thinking, whoa, I didn't even know I had that in me. And I was in her face yelling at her. And I was all the, it's like my rage came out back at her. And to be honest, I will tell you, it felt, when I reflect back, is that how I would have liked my anger to express? No, but I think years of not expressing anger, it felt so good. It felt incredible. And when I sit with that, I think, okay, that's not something I want to create as a habit, that type of expression of anger. But boy, does that show me how much emotion was stuck in my body. If I feel like it felt like a pressure cooker had just released after so long. And it just felt honestly incredible. Like I felt amazing the next day. Like I was 10 pounds lighter.
Yeah, I get that. Anger, it's like a taboo thing. I think we could talk about sex way more than we could talk about anger, like live, even on podcasts, because anger, it's one of these topics that everyone gets scared about. There's lots of different reasons, like either like you shared, you've witnessed as a child quite an explosive behavior, and you've just decided, okay, anger, which actually the behavior that we witness in that case is rage and ag aggressiveness, but that's gets translated at, okay, that's anger. So anger is a bad thing. I never want to be like them, so I'm not gonna do that ever. In my case, it was like I couldn't, like if I so much as had a reaction that was beyond, beyond saying yes, absolutely, I'm gonna do whatever you say. So if I tried to be angry, that was immediately punished, and it could get physical. Like my mom could get physical in her punishment just to stop that. So I learned, okay, I can go to tears. I still get punished, but I'm not gonna get punished quite as much as if I rebel and get angry. So I'm never gonna get angry. And so this anger work, and anger is the energy behind boundaries. So it's like so potent an energy. So when we finally tap into that, and I get that as you shared, it's not like how you want it to go. Sometimes it happens. So if you're listening in and it has happened to you, I've got someone recently actually reaching out, a listener asking on the podcast, if I could do an episode on this, which I will, but they were asking exactly about anger. They explode and then they feel really bad afterwards. There are ways to tap into that anger within the body work somatically and in embodiment. And I'm sure, Janik, you have tapped into those practices or practices that help you with that. Have you anything that you want to share on that? Have you found practices that support you in, opening up that lead to that anger, but when you are in a safe place to do that.
I mean, for me personally, and I say that that was the first time I got in touch with my anger, but you know what? You use the word rage. I would actually say that was the first time I expressed rage. I think I have intentionally worked through anger prior to this. This was the first kind of explosive rage moment that I had. But my personal favorite way to express anger, to channel anger out of my body, is boxing, is to hit something. it really, 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 and I don't even actually have to hit, it can be, I go to classes that involve either kickboxing, hitting, like punch sequences. They don't even have to be actual boxing classes. They can be any classes that involve that type of exertion. And I can, it's always funny because I know that they are workout classes sometimes that I go to. They're more like cardio even based ones, not where you're always actually punching a bag, just throwing sequences. And if you hear, or if I'm in a room with 30 people, I can always tell I'm there doing a different type of work than everyone else is because I'm the one that you will hear in the room. Everyone else is, you know, in there for the workout, and you'll hear me, and I'm like, ah. You know, it's so for me, there's a whole component that of just fully surrendering into that class, fully surrendering to every expression that wants. Every time I throw a punch, there always seems to be an audible component. So it's putting myself into a safe environment where I can expel that energy, but not restricting any energetic like expression that wants to come along with it. I think some people, so part of that is, yes, I'm in this public space and nobody else is being audible. Can I give myself permission though to let go fully? Because if I'm in there and I'm throwing punches and what's wanting to come out is these sighs, these breaths, these screams, and I'm holding those back, then I'm only releasing half. So for me, because I've done a lot of work on visibility and feeling very comfortable being in my expression no matter where I am, I'm able to go into a fitness class that has 30 people in it, and I really don't care if nobody else is making a sound. I will scream, and that's okay. Nobody, if people want, what's wrong with her? I think that's okay. I'm here. I'm getting exactly what I need out of this, and I don't mind if anyone thinks anything about me. So it's really surrender. Whatever you do choose when it comes to releasing anger, I think there has to be a full surrender of every expression that wants to come out. Like you have to be really intuitively feeling like if you want to scream, you need to scream. That's another one, screaming. I recently discovered that screaming in cars when I'm alone, it's a safe place. I feel safe in a car, and there's times where I go on drives just to scream, and I find it to be a very, very effective tool for me. So it's really just, I can always feel what the anger wants. It's like, does it want movement? Sometimes it wants movement, sometimes it wants screaming, but it always seems to be, how can I max out like this energy that's wanting to shift out of me? How can I give it like full expression?
Yeah, beautiful. I love that. Absolutely. The movement and allowing yourself to go fully there, that's brilliant. I totally resonate with the punches. That's like, I love that. I do need that sometimes. And it's like, go for it, whatever it is. If it's a pillow, if it's a fitness class. And I suppose if you are feeling self-conscious and you don't want to do it in front of other people, I mean, you can always, there's tons of classes that are at this point, I mean, you can do plenty of classes on YouTube and stuff and do your sequences at home in a room where you can scream and no one hears you. Because I do know sometimes, like, I do get it at first. I was super shy. Now I'm like, I mean, I don't care anymore. Like, literally, I went through that bridge. It's like, whatever. I think doing the podcast and taking the first selfies on Instagram was like my baptism of fire. But like, I do get how that can get quite that can be intense for someone. So you can do it on your own, but allowing the vocalizing and allowing the movement, full surrender to it, that's priceless.
And while it's coming through, there's also, so I teach this meditation technique called active consciousness meditation. It's also incredible to release anything, and it involves a very powerful breathing technique. But it's, they call it a kriya. Kriya is like the original name of like the these body mechanical techniques. Kriya is the name of the technique itself. and how the mechanism works in your body. So in India, they use the word kriya to describe all these different movements or breath techniques that have some sort of biomechanical function to release. So there's also a lineage of yoga called Kriya Yoga, and there's specific kriyas that you can do to release anger. And that's if you just go on YouTube, you could look up like Kriya for anger, and just breath work in general, I think is amazing, 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 amazing to release just about everything. There's a breath work for it. The breath is so, so, so powerful. But all the kriyas specifically for anger tend to be repetitive and lengthy, because what happens is there's a point where you're doing it. Like, for example, there's this kriya called the ego eradicator, and you're just have your arms up with your thumb up and you're pumping your arms. But I think you're supposed to do it for there's different if you want to do it on the short end, there's amount of time, but I think it's either like 7 minutes, 11 minutes, or I can't remember the higher number. So just imagine you're doing this for 11 minutes and you're trying to stay up here. There's a point where your whole everything is yelling. It's like it actually taps into the anger, because it's like you're angry that you have to do this. You're like, this feel like, I want, like you start hearing, I want to stop. And then you're angry at the pro you get angry at the process. So just staying with it, I don't know that, I mean, these are ancient techniques that have been studied and have been around for centuries. So there's some techniques that I find incredibly, incredibly powerful. And if you just go on YouTube and go Kriya for anger, I'm sure that there's tons of free resources on there.
It sounds like it's provoking the anger out of you, like the one that's there, because no one can trigger what's not there. So if like you're just doing this terrible, strenuous thing, it's provoking it out of you. And so at that point, what you were saying about surrendering to make the practice go full circle, surrender with whatever comes. And if you have to scream, scream. If you have to punch a pillow, if you know, make sure you're safe. Always safe when you do these things. They are potent practices. So it's really important to make sure you have, like, you know, you set yourself in a container that you can be safe. Your car, if you're on your own, that can work. Or if you're like, I remember years ago my mentor telling me, go into the forest and scream wherever, because I'm living very rural, so I'm blessed I can do that. I can go where no one hears me. But yeah, make sure you're very safe with that.
I love the I always tell people to go into nature to do things, because I always say that the reason why you go to nature, not just because then you'll be alone and you'll be surrounded in this beautiful area, I say it's because the trees will take it from you. The earth will take it. Like, I really feel this, like, that is like the earth is working with us and is here, just like the cyclical nature of our breath. It's like the exact anything. They will take out of us what we don't need, the poison, the CO2. They will regenerate it and they will give us what we need. And I really think it's like if you go into the nature and you are screaming and you're releasing anger, I don't know what they're taking, and but something the equivalent of like the way they do with the breath, there's a cyclical nature of they are gonna take that out of you and then they're gonna return you something.
Yeah, because we very often, and that's part of looking at anger from how we've been brought up, and so feel it that is like a negative thing. But anger is fuel, anger is energy. There's a lot of energy that comes from anger. And when you learn to tap in, because what we're trying to release ultimately is the explosive backlog. So that then you get to that place where it's not like you don't get angry anymore, but you can tap into the anger and then use it as the energy to fuel your boundaries, you know, the energy to fuel a grounded, no, absolutely, I'm not gonna do that. Thank you very much. That's actually a healthy anger. That's you gotta tap into the anger to be able to do that. And that this kind of exercises, that's what they do. So yeah, that's brilliant. I love actually that the conversation went this way, because this is always a really potent topic.
Yeah, I was like, oh, I didn't know that this is where we're going. You never really know, right?
No.
I love it. Something I was just going to say about the anger as well. You know what? I think it came in and then it left. Maybe it'll cycle back.
That's okay.
But yes, anger has been, I know what I was going to say. I was going to say another thing that I've found really helpful is just now that I'm starting to connect more deeply to my anger, even though sometimes I can identify it before I can express it. And I think a lot of people are like this with all feelings. Sometimes we can intellectualize our feelings. We can talk about our feelings. And a lot of people create the illusion that they are, no, I'm very deep in my feelings. I'm very connected to my feelings. But that's because they're talking about it. But a lot of people are overthinking and underfeeling. So it's like until you actually feel the feeling, you're not fully processing it. And with anger, even though I'm not fully in the feeling component of it, I'm really now in the intellectual component of it, which is it is the beginning, I do think. First, we have to recognize our feeling, and then we learn to express it sometimes. Sometimes it goes like that. And I do find that for me, it is helpful even just to say, I'm angry. That made me angry. Because there would have been a time where it's like the talking about how you said taboo, like even just to like claim, like fully claim that that made me angry, can it's so taboo, and like it can be scary for some people to say you that made me angry. Like it feels like it's especially I think people socialized as women. It's like there hasn't been a script for women to be angry. We are supposed to be like men have more of a script and permission to be angry than women do. And so just to be able to say, I'm angry right now, I think is such a great starting point because it's taking ownership of that emotion and saying, you are allowed to exist here. You are allowed to be here. I don't know too many women who say, I'm angry right now. That made me angry.
No, because we lose our attachments. That's what we're programmed to believe.
Yeah.
From this life, ancestral wounds, like you know, and we have plenty of that that tells us no, when you actually start expressing your anger, when you start letting your voice be heard, lo and behold, express actually an opinion because you really, you know, something makes you angry and you want to change it. That's there's literally something that happens, that part of the body knots up. So to that's another thing that can be done is like when you feel, especially at the beginning of this work, when you're still feeling like anger is somewhat challenging. And I have been there. This is like very recent work, actually. I always thought I was an angry person until someone told me, okay, go scream. And I couldn't express any anger. And I had to go through many try and tears and tears and tears before I got there. So I really get it. So something that you can do at the beginning is like when you're feeling that kind of, okay, there is a surge that could be anger. Maybe you're beginning to identify it as anger and you would like to go and maybe do what we've been talking about. You want to go punch something, you want to scream, you want to do that, but you feel that that's not happening. If you can go in and find that knot in your body, like literally feel where that is, and then start doing whatever it takes to make it a little bit less knotted up. Now, this could be again moving, it could be sounding, it could be breathing, it could be touch, putting a hand. Like for me, it's typically the stomach, so that's where I'm going. But so whatever it is that kind of makes that knot a little bit less knotted. And then from there, gently, you might start seeing your voice wants to express or, you know, your body wants to move. But like, so taking it one step at a time, that can be very, very helpful.
Yeah, for me it's always the throat. So even like even the in the jaw, holding tension in the jaw. So even just stretching out my jaw, I found it's very effective, giving myself little massages around my neck and my jaw. I already feel releases so much for me.
Yeah,
And that's,
really.
I think, the audible feeling, the audible sound for me is so important because of the anger. And and for me, the anger also stems back, is rooted in a trauma that I had at a young age, where I was a very vocal child, and expressed that something really terrible happened to me. And what happened as a result was I was told not to talk about it. So this anger formed of you taking my voice away, feeling like I was silenced. And especially as a young child who experienced what I experienced, and actually found the courage and the bravery to go forward and say, this is what happened to me, where statistically most kids don't speak up when they experience the type of abuse that I experienced. The fact that I said something and then I was told, okay, now that it's done, we don't talk about it. It just, there's still, even as I'm saying it now, it's like I can feel like just all of this tension in my throat just go, how dare you take my voice away?
Thank you so much for sharing that. I have been working on this in with women for like over 15 years, and I'm part of that group as well, but I've yet to meet someone that hasn't shared a similar story. It's actually incredible how many of us have been through some level of abuse, maybe sexual, maybe physical, maybe some traumatic experience, and at some point being told, hush, hush. Either I don't believe you, so no point in talking about it because you're not being believed in what you're bringing, or it's your fault, so you're better not talking about it. That was my case. Or you're gonna shame the entire family, so don't talk about it. And that kind of knot that forms. So thanks for bringing that in.
And for me, the situation was actually I was in the care of my aunt when something happened to me, and she told me if I tell anybody that I would never be able, that they would take me away from her, that I wouldn't be able to see her ever again, and that I just shouldn't talk about it because if anyone found out, that she would get in trouble. Which also speaks to the level of caretaking that I've taken on in my life. It's like from such a young age, it's like, oh, okay, so I need to caretake my aunt, even though I need really intense caretaking right now. But no, you know what? I'm going to put my stuff aside and I'm going to caretake her right now. I'm going to silence myself so I can take care of her because her needs are more important than mine.
Yeah, and just like that, then a pattern starts where from out of that, and that's what happens for so many of us. We then take on those patterns, and then we realize later on in life that, oh my God, I'm just caring for everyone all the time, and I'm never expressing my need, I'm never asking for help, I'm never saying what's happening inside of me or what I'm feeling. And then we just go back, and I love this work because when you go back to the root of where, and not always we need to actually know the full story of where it started, but if you do get to actually get the memories, that's a bonus that helps. But when we get back to that root within the body, then it's like that pattern can really shift, and you can start, and we go back full circle to what we were talking about at the beginning. You actually start getting your authenticity out. You start learning, oh, wait a minute. I can actually express myself, and I can actually stop caring nonstop about everyone else and all of that.
Yeah. And right here, I feel like this is like a core wound that I've seen in so many people that triggers anger, is if somebody is doing something and it triggers the feeling of this person thinks their needs are more important than mine. Like that is something that I experienced, especially if you have a caretaker archetype and you're starting to acknowledge it and work on it, and you start to see people who, it's one thing if you're doing the caretaking and you're going above and beyond, but if you come from a family where it was expected of you to caretake, and so then you've become this person who allows people to put that expectation on you, and then you show up and you caretake. And then when you start to do the work on this to kind of pull away, people will still be showing up in these ways where they're acting like, actually, my needs are more important than yours. And that is like any, it can be the most little thing for me sometimes. And I, it can be sometimes I'll be doing something and somebody will start talking to me and then, but they didn't actually take time to get my attention or to see if I had space or anything. They just start talking and then they go, "Were you even listening? Did you hear anything I said?" And immediately I get angry. And it took me a while to understand why am I like I'm really angry inside. And it's because in my when I sit with it, I think, did you really think that everything you had to say is more important than what I'm doing here, and that you could just come in and command and demand my attention without asking me if I have space, if this is a good time? You think that the thing you need right now is more important than the thing I'm doing. But when somebody comes in and I'm in that, before I used to just caretake. Oh, sorry, I wasn't listening. Tell me again. Whereas now that I'm aware, oh wait, actually, you think what you need is more important than what I'm doing right now. Actually, I'm angry. I'm angry. Why do you think that what you need right now is more important than what I'm doing? Why can't you ask me if I have the space for this right now? And just say, actually, I'm a little bit frustrated right now because I don't have the space for this. And then I think just practicing that more often, people go, oh, okay. You know, it's like that anger being there is important because it also makes the other person go, oh, wait, actually, oh, I can't just demand and command this person's attention.
Yeah, that's where it gets like the energy behind boundaries. At that point, you're like aware and you're like, okay, I'm angry right now. Okay, wait a minute. You can't talk to me while I'm doing something else. That's my boundary. You gotta come to me and ask for my attention, see if it's okay, and then I will tell you yes or no. Maybe I'll tell you no. Not now is not the time. And that's anger behind boundaries, precisely.
And just for anyone who's listening, just know that your needs are important, are valid, and that other people's needs aren't more important than yours. I think it's just such a valuable lesson to learn that it doesn't matter. It's like the whole put your oxygen mask on first. Like you are actually more valuable and more helpful to other people when you put your needs first. It's not selfish. That's another word that I've had to do a lot of work on, is to find the balance of, you know, not thinking I'm selfish, and like not self-abandoning, but also not being selfish, and finding that happy medium.
Yeah, it's another word that gets a lot of bad, has a bad reputation, but
Yeah.
it's taking care of yourself. That's like the foundation. You can't, as you said, you can't take care of anyone else if you don't take care of yourself. And if you're listening in and you're a mother, you know that like that's like the rule number one when you are a mom, because I know if I coming from a mother that has neglected me, I wanted to do everything for my daughters. But if
Yeah.
I, and that way I wasn't taking care of myself. And then I wasn't actually turning up in a good way for them. So, like, always start with yourself. Being selfish, the mentor years and years ago was calling it clever selfishness.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah.
That was an amazing conversation, and we've been talking for about an hour. I
Yeah.
don't have a hard stop, so if you have anything else that you want to bring in that you feel that you want to share, it's you're totally welcome to do that.
Yeah, you know, there was one thing that I heard on one of your podcasts that I just wanted to it was one of the things that I was like, if I can talk about this one thing, because it was the one. I mean, I listened to many from the day I found you on Spotify. I think I listened to like 15 episodes. I listened to things on 1.7 speed, so I also can listen really fast. So I was just listening. I was like, wow, oh my gosh. But there was the one episode that really, 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 really got me, was the episode on giving and receiving. And I just wanted to say, I have been working on increasing I have recognized for a few years now that I have such a low capacity to receive. And it is something that I have been working on for a couple years now. And I feel like something you said in one of your episodes, it was like it gave me the missing piece of the puzzle. And I understood, okay, Janique, your capacity to receive isn't big. And I already have been doing work to stretch it. And part of that has just been, okay, this person is offering something. Say yes. Okay, you need would help make this better, like easier. Ask. So it started off like that, very simple. Somebody offering, can you say yes? And if something is going to make this easier by asking for help, can you ask for help? But what I have noticed in the last couple of years in this practice is that even though I've technically increased my capacity to receive, it still has never felt good. And I've never really understood why. Like I was like, okay, I'm doing the thing that I'm trying to do. I'm now the shift is happening. And in some ways it does feel good. Like obviously, if you need help with something, you ask for help, somebody helps. It feels good in the sense that, well, the physical pressure of the task is now split up. And it feels good that it's now done in 3 hours instead of six. So no matter what, circumstantially, that's going to feel better. So it's like, okay, this does feel good, but it never felt, I'm going to call it like clean, like never felt completely clean. And I did not understand it until I listened to your podcast. And I finally understand that it's because every time I receive, in my subconscious mind, it felt like I was creating debt. And it's because of the manipulation tactics of receiving, giving and receiving that has always existed in my dynamics with my mom, that I didn't even fully understand it or see the impact of it until literally last week when I started listening to the podcast. And when I really got into it, and that's why I gave the language to it. Oh, I call it debt. It feels like debt. And it's like, it doesn't matter. Sometimes, sure, it feels great to go buy stuff on a credit card. Like to have the stuff feels good, but you still have credit card debt, you know? So it's like, that's exactly when I was able to think about it like that, like, oh, that's what's happening. I'm using a credit card. It always feels like I'm using a credit card. It's like, okay, yeah, I've got the thing that I want, but I feel like now I'm in debt. So it just feels like, okay, now what's my plan? Now that I got the thing that I want, so the cash advance happened, I got the thing. In this moment, it felt like temporary solution. I've got the thing, but what's my plan to pay off the debt? So now I'm working on, and like I said, this is now just in my awareness for a week now. So now I'm working on, okay, what do I do now that if every time I'm going into a situation, there's a part of me that's thinking of this or looking at this as debt, how do I now unprogram the belief that this is debt? How do I stop feeling like this? Because even though now I can see the pattern and I understand it, there's this little part of my brain that goes, yeah, but you don't know that that person isn't thinking that you owe them something. And it doesn't matter who they are, I can, and I actually think I attracted a apart my last partnership, I think there was also elements of I don't want to definitely not at all, like there was just a little bit of a 50-50 reciprocity expectation of like everything meeting the mark 50-50. And we did a lot of really fantastic work, and we were able to talk through and work through a lot of our stuff. And none of that is me saying that the partnership was a beautiful partnership and very healthy, and patterns came up like they do in all relationships. But there
Yes.
was a part of that relationship dynamic that also made me believe, yeah, there is an expectation that if you do this, I do this. If you do this, I do this. So there is just still this part of my brain that's wired to think, yeah, if I take, I owe.
I get that. The narcissistic mother's love is always conditional. And it's always transactional. So like what they give with an agenda. And this can be very subconscious. So like there's different degrees and different levels. If you're listening in, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's pre-planned. Sometimes it is. I've had experiences where it's definitely pre-planned. Very, there's an awareness of it. So I'm gonna give this person this or my child this. So then I'm gonna get love. But sometimes it's subconscious. It's subconscious patterns that that's the way they express, but they always want a response. And it can be like literally, I'm gonna give you money and I'm expecting you to spend time with me because I've done that. Or it can be more subtle, like you just have to show me that you love me. You just have to spend time with me. You just have to, like it's not very clear. So it leaves us in this fog and with this pattern of, okay, if I'm receiving something, if I'm actually accepting something from someone, what do I open up? And it can be very unsafe.
Yeah. So what, in your experience, has helped you in increasing your capacity to receive, or what have you seen working with people who feel this sort of like, I don't want to accept, or even to work on? I mean, I'm at the point where I am accepting, but it almost feels like it feels so uncomfortable to do so. Like, I'm like, it, how do I now work on accepting and actually enjoying the thing that I'm accepting without it feeling so loaded with discomfort every single time?
There's two things that I would work with that usually when a client comes in, and this is incredibly common. So first of all, if you're listening and you're like, oh wow, that's actually what happens to me as well. This is incredibly common. These pathways of receiving, the very often they're quite shut down, and it's one of the things that, especially as women, feminine energy is all about receiving. We are the receiving pole.
Yeah.
So, like, that's that part. When it's shut down, we end up being hyper masculine, and it just doesn't really, it's not very helpful. So, there's two things, like, the most sort of practical hands-on thing that I do teach, and I believe I even mentioned that in that podcast episode, is to take time. So pause, feel, and then respond. So when someone wants to give you something, or the very same, the other way, because sometimes when we have a problem with receiving, we tend to give too much because we don't want to receive, so we give. So if someone is offering you something, or if someone is asking something of you, instead of jumping in and either sort of rejecting or accepting straight away out of a pattern, pause first, then feel into it. And this could take you a couple of days. It mightn't actually, you could say, I can't really answer you right now. I'm just going to feel into it and I'll get back to you. So you feel into your body, feel what's happening, feel what you're actually feeling. Does it actually feel good to go with what you're being asked, or to receive what you're being given? there is an inner wisdom that tells us if the other person is actually wanting something from us or not. And again, you want to feel into, are you willing to give it? That's and sort of understanding that you have the right to feel into that. You don't have to give anything if you don't want to, if it doesn't feel right to you. So that feeling is important. Pause, feel, and then at that point you respond and you give the response that feels in alignment with you, that feels okay with you. So that's kind of like the hands-on, okay, you can start doing that from now.
Yes.
And then again, you can go into your body. Even when you are receiving, and it's like on paper, this should actually feel like a good experience, but still you're feeling that ickiness, there's still something that, and you feel you have learned, like I know you, Janique, have that awareness to actually know, okay, this is a pattern that is kicking up a fuss. So just go into your body. Where is that? Where is that discomfort? Where is that not? Where? What part of your body is, much like the anger, that is not feeling? And again, feel into that. There could be information there that's actually telling you that the situation isn't clean and that other person actually is not being clean with you. Or if it's a pattern, when you soften that part that is knotted up, you're going to feel much better. And that builds up. So eventually that's going to get better and better. So that's how I would work with that.
This is so such a beautiful, like that answer just hit so beautiful in me. And I just thought to myself, oh, this is part of the struggle and part of, I always say we teach what we need. What we needed, what we still need, and what we will continue to need. And it's funny how you just brought in the inner wisdom. And I just thought to myself, right. And I teach people to not gaslight themselves. And what are they gaslighting? They're gaslighting the inner wisdom. So how could this whole how would this whole receiving, where does it get convoluted? I think for people, I think is because the inner wisdom is coming in sometimes and is saying, actually, the thing that you're perceiving here, that there is a reciprocity and expectation, there's an inner wisdom happening. Actually, that's real. And you don't need to gaslight yourself. So I think that that's like a really big piece that I'm going to take away from this and remind myself, because I still to this day have to remind myself, like, hey, you're gaslighting yourself. Like, your inner wisdom is speaking and you are gaslighting yourself out of that wisdom. You're using some sort of belief system or something, some program that's really not working for you to create distrust within yourself. So I think a big piece that I will take away and remind myself, and hopefully anyone who's listening can remind themselves, to trust their inner wisdom and to not gaslight that part of you. And even just to be the witness of the part of you that's gaslighting.
Oh, I'm very glad. That's a beautiful takeaway thing, and it's a beautiful message. That inner wisdom is key. All the work, and I know that that's the work you do. It's the work I do, and I actually love this. It's reconnecting people with that inner wisdom.
Absolutely,
because we all have it.
And it really is. And my Instagram handle is intention is everything. And it's because I really just believe in the power of intention. It's like, you have to be intentional about strengthening that relationship with that inner wisdom. You got to treat it like a relationship, like any relationship. How does a relationship thrive? You put work into it. You spend time with it. You make commitments to it. You spend quality time with it. It's and to me, the inner wisdom is an entity that is within us that is just craving a full-blown relationship. They don't want to be in a half-assed relationship. They want to be in a fully committed relationship. And so many people are wondering why, you know, they don't trust that inner wisdom, or why they're not connected to that inner wisdom. It's like, what are you doing to harness that relationship? What are you doing to fuel that relationship? What are you doing to create safety with that relationship? What are you doing to build that relationship? It's not, it doesn't, it's not just going to be there. It's don't take it for granted.
Yeah, beautiful, beautiful message. I don't want to add anything to that because that's brilliant and beautifully said.
Yeah. Oh,
Absolutely.
this is such a beautiful, powerful conversation. I'm so grateful that I found your podcast. I'm so happy that I reached out. I'm so happy that I messaged to ask to be on the podcast. I don't, I'm, it's very, I don't know if you know anything about human design, but one of the things I do also with my, a tool that I use and something I do with my clients is I read human design, and my human design is I'm a manifester. So I have big initiator energy. So for me, it was just very, like, it was like, I felt this, like, I have to ask if we can collab. Like, I have to ask, and it just felt like this full initiation. Like no, it doesn't matter. Even if she says no, even if it's not the right time, it's like it just from. I think it was like 2 days after I found the podcast. I was like, "Yep, we need to have a conversation. I want to speak to you."
Yeah, and I was like reading the email. I was like, oh yeah, absolutely, yeah, that makes
Amazing.
perfect sense. Sounds awesome. So yeah, brilliant. I'm glad you did. I'm really, really glad you did. And this was an amazing conversation. And for anyone listening, I will put the links to find Janik. So like I know your Instagram is your place when you where you connect with people, where anyone that wants to connect with you, find you and find your work can find you there. So I will have the link to that in the description of this episode. And yeah, this was an amazing conversation and maybe we'll do it again sometimes. I feel like there can be more to this. So we'll see what the future holds. But
Absolutely.
for now, thank you so, so much, Janik, for being here, for having been here and sharing your wisdom on this
And thank
podcast.
you so much for having me. Thank you so, so much. It was a beautiful reason to get out of bed early this morning.
Yeah,
Not that I'm usually up at that time anyways, but to get ready and be, presentable and in my channel at that time was really nice.
fantastic. Thank you so much. And thank you for everyone listening in. Yeah, for listening, for being here, for doing the work. It's precious. And thank you for that. So with
Yes, thank
that,
you. Yeah, take care, and hopefully we'll talk again soon.
bye bye everyone. Lots of
Bye,
love.
everyone.